Well, we are in our fifth session of the exposition of Ezekiel 38 and 39. And I want to take us back to some of the other issues that we've looked at leading up to this so that we can easily understand what it is that we're talking about in these chapters. We began our study with the discussion of the nations that have persecuted the Jews. And I only focused on three people groups because there's many, many more that have implemented focused persecutions where governmental and or ecclesiastical bodies have issued promulgations to go after the Jews and to persecute them. One of these groups is Germany. Another is the Muslim nations. And a third is Russia. All have engaged in very serious persecutions of the Jews. And we know from just recent history of what the Muslim nations have been doing, and from a not quite too recent history, but back into the 1930s and 40s, we see the Germans set up the most industrialized genocidal effort that this world ever seen, where they implemented a huge killing machine to eliminate 6 million or so of the world Jews population. And the second reason for this invasion that's coming, yet future to us, and from the news today and recently, it may not be too far away, the Iranians and the Russians getting together here in a nuclear area. But we have a discussion of world empires that we looked at in previous lessons. And I want to look at that again today, just very, very briefly, to see what it is that we've looked at in the past. And you can see what some of the other reasoning is behind God bringing this invasion. The book of Daniel talks about world empires that have controlled Jerusalem. And Christ talked about this in the book of Luke, in the Olivet Discourse. He said that Jerusalem will be trodden down by Gentiles until the fullness of the Gentiles be completed or be fulfilled. And we look at, going way back to 586 B.C., we see that Nebuchadnezzar came into Jerusalem for the third time, and he sacked Jerusalem and leveled it. Very little of the temple remained, and he set up the first empire, according to the Bible, that controlled Jerusalem. It was the Babylonians. He was succeeded by the Medo-Persians, who took control of his empire, including Jerusalem. The Greeks, under Alexander the Great, came in after the Medo-Persians. And once they came in, they took control of Jerusalem. They had a vast area that they controlled, was up into Europe and northern Africa, because actually Alexander was from Macedon, which is north of Greece. His father had given him an army. His father had given him a lot of wealth to go ahead and conquer, and he went all the way to Asia, into Asia. When he died at the young age of about 33, he did not have a succession plan, and it was asked of him on his deathbed, well, who's going to take control? You've got this enormous empire you've set up. Somebody's got to do this. And he had four generals that he said, well, give it to the strongest one. Well, the four generals, these guys here, Ptolemy, Seleucus, Cassander, and Lysimachus, they just started fighting each other, one over the other, trying to get control. And they ultimately did get control of parts of the empire. The next world empire that came in after the Greeks was the Romans, and we know about the Romans. What is important to know about the Romans that we've discussed before is that it's the form of government that they set up that we have to be aware of. It's not the fact that the Romans were there, but the Romans set up an imperialistic form of government. We are, the United States, we are an imperialistic type of government. It means you just try and influence your neighbors, what you do. The governments previous to them would take the neighbors and bring them back to their country. That's how they influenced them. They weren't really imperialists in the sense that we are, or the sense that the Romans set up. So there were the Roman Empire, and the empire split into two sections with Valentinian, an east and a west. And then in previous messages, we've traced the people that were in control of those two sections of government through the eastern side, through to the Muslim nations and Russia, the western side, through to the European nations, into the western democracies. They are all imperialistic forms of government. Now, the Russians have, and the Muslims have become despotic, but it's that imperialism that the Bible talks about being set up. And at some point in time, the events that we are reading about, Ezekiel 38 and 39, are going to result in an elimination of the Eastern political prowess of those countries. The Russians and the Muslim nations and the Eastern Germans are going to lose any of their political power in the world scene. We're going to see that today in today's text. And then the items here, the rest of these items here are not related to this, but because Ezekiel 38 and 39 will happen, and it will cause the Eastern Bloc political powers to lose their prowess, there will form a one-world government from the democracies that are left in the West. The Bible does not say how it will happen. It just says there will be 10 units of some sort. I don't know if they're economic. I don't know if they're political. I don't know if it's a combination of the two. But I know there will be 10 leaders for those nations. And each of those 10 is called a king in the book of Daniel. And an 11th person will pop up on the scene. And we know from the text that he's born of a Roman woman, but that doesn't mean he comes from Rome. It just means his lineage comes from a Roman woman. He's not a Jew. He's a Gentile. And he will come on the scene and he will kill three of those leaders, three of those kings. The other 7 will submit to him, and he will then be the supreme leader of the world. Now, that's how this is all going to roll out. Now, when we get into the Antichrist stage, it's just absolute imperialism. Absolute imperialism. One guy running the entire world, whatever it is that he wants, and that's what will happen. During his early tenure, he will sign a covenant with the Jewish people of some sort. The Bible doesn't say what it is. It just says there's going to be some kind of a treaty or a pact or an arrangement that he's going to sign with them. That starts the Great Tribulation. The Christians who are truly born again will be gone from the earth sometime before that covenant is signed. And we don't know when. Christ made it real clear that nobody's going to know the day or the hour when he's coming. So we're not going to know. And it's best not to even try and figure it out, because you'll just beat your head against the wall and you'll never get fulfilled trying to do that. But sometime before that covenant. So it's possible that Christians could be on the earth when the Antichrist comes to power. It's very possible. We won't be here for the tribulation, but it's conceivable that you could be here to see who the Antichrist is, because we're leaving this earth sometime before that covenant. At the end of the age of imperialism, if you will, when the tribulation is over, the Jews will be running the world in the Messianic kingdom. Now, for those of you that are with me when we did the book of Revelation, you saw how much time we spent on the Messianic kingdom and who is in control. That's all available on my seminary's website if you want the address. I can give it to you. I've got about half of the 94 lessons up there. I'm gradually putting them up, but we'll have them all up here in a few more weeks. So anyway, that's the short story. That's the short story of what this is about, because it's important to know that, one, God gets his vengeance. He always gets his vengeance on every sin in every sphere, no matter where it is, in the individual, and collectively on the people that have come against Israel. As we've seen in the Abrahamic covenant, that God says, I'm going to curse them that curse you. Abraham was the first Hebrew, and there's a national promise to Israel as a result of that. So we need to be aware that those are the two reasons. God getting his vengeance, and God who's told us what's going to happen and allows sinful people to do these things, to grab the power that they want and they think they have, ignoring him, and he lets them do it, and even guides them in it to fulfill his purposes. And one of his purposes is to let this one world government happen, and it's going to happen. We know it's going to happen. Oh, it does work. That's great. Don't tell anybody I don't need Joan today. Don't tell Joan. If we look back at Genesis, because we've got these strange people groups in this prophecy of Ezekiel 38 and 39, and this is why it's important to teach the whole Bible, because God will use the people groups mentioned in and genealogies given in Genesis throughout the Bible. He'll refer to the 10 to 12 tribes of Israel by their given names. He'll refer to the different nations that are still on the earth today by their original people group name. And what we've looked at in the past is when the flood was over and the ark landed on Mount Ararat in modern-day Turkey, the son of Noah, Japheth, went up to the north. Now, this area here is where he went. The other sons went down in here, and then they spread out from there. The Shemites, who became the Jews and who became the Arabs. You know, it's inappropriate to call somebody that is persecuting the Jews as anti-Semitic. He's really anti-Jew, because the Semites are multiple people groups that centered in the Arabian Peninsula in the Middle East, and includes all the Arabs. So it's more appropriate to call them anti-Jewish. But anyway, his three sons, Noah's three sons, Shem, Ham, and Japheth, all went in different directions. We looked at the text and we saw that we're trying to identify Magog, Rosh, Meshach, Tubal, and they're all determined from Japheth's progeny. They're all in the area of modern-day Russia. That's where these folks went. Now, Noah had three sons, Shem, Ham, and Japheth. Japheth, I've put a red mark around to identify him. He had sons, and one of his or two of his sons had sons, obviously. And the blue boxes are these specific people group names that are used in this prophecy in Ezekiel 38 and 39. And if you read the chapters in Genesis, it'll talk about where they went, which direction they went after they got out of the ark. And by knowing that, we can then see where these different countries came from around the world. Western Europe and ultimately the United States are the Japhethites. We are the progeny from Japheth. It goes back a long ways, and there's a lot of intervening marriages in there, but that's the mode, or the, if you will, that's the group that came out of the ark and populated that area. The Magogians, the Meshechians, and the Tubalians, they were located between the Black and the Caspian Sea. That's southern Russia today. And Meshech and Tubal gave way to names. There's always a developmental dynamic of names in the Bible and names from today's names back to the names that are in the Bible. Meshech and Tubal became Moscow, the capital of Russia, and Tobolsk, a major city in the Urals, which is up in Siberia. Rosh is a Hebrew name for head, or north, or above, or, you know, it's in a high place. That's the basis for the modern name of Russia. So then these names cover the territories of northern and southern Russia, Europe, and Siberia, and all the way east into Asia. One of the commentaries that I've got that's written by Jewish people who are not believers, Rabbi Moshe Eisenman, he's talking about some Hebraic seminaries from the Middle Ages that were writing. The Goyim had a tradition that these controls, in other words, who's going to actually run the show here in this invasion, were indeed located in Russia. One tradition passed down from the Vilna Gaon, which is a Jewish writing that came out of those seminaries, when the Russian Navy passes through the Bosphorus on the way to the Dardanelles, it's time to put on Sabbath clothes in anticipation of the coming of the Messiah. So they were well aware, the Jews have been well aware of this for a long, long time, that there is going to be an invasion of some sort by the Russians against Israel. And if you go way back, I think, to the first, or maybe it was the second component of our study here, we talked about the man who would be Gog. Gog is a title of a Russian person who's going to be leading this Allied Confederation. And we talked about Vladimir Zhirinovsky. He's affectionately referred to as Mad Vlad because he's a Hitler-type guy. He's run for the presidency a number of times. He's actually been in their parliament. He was elected with 25% of the vote. He hasn't been in office for about 9 years. But he hasn't stopped his Liberal Democratic Party, which is analogous to the Nazi Party, is vehemently anti-Jewish. And they hate the Jews. He's talking about Russia has to go and win this war down in the south. So other people are talking about this, not just the ancient Jews, not just the Bible, but you can see people start, even contemporary society, talk about this. Russia's not alone in the invasion, though. Russia is just part of the Confederacy, and they're the leader of it. Other nations listed in the verses we looked at last week are Persia, which is present-day Iran. And Iran, as some of you know for sure, was very, very pro-Western when the Shah was here. But after the Khomeini Revolution, all that changed. All that changed. There are mortal enemies now, and even more so Russia's. Israel's. They've been getting a lot of support from Russia for the nuclear efforts that they have been trying to do. And I heard it on the radio coming in here that there's a lot of anxiety right now over this reactor that the Russians are fueling. And stay tuned. These are the nations that are encircling little Israel. And if you look at little Israel in the middle there, all these green countries are the Muslim countries. And they all want that little teeny piece of real estate. Isn't that something? They've got this huge, vast amount of real estate, and they don't care about it. They could care less about their real estate. They just want that last little piece. Because it's God's real estate. That's it. It's God's real estate, and the Jews are God's people. And Satan has been against God's people from the beginning. It hasn't changed. The United States now considers Iran our most dangerous enemy that we have. And rightly so. Rightly so. One of the Israeli writings called Midrashes called Gomer, one of the tribes, Germania, the Talmud, another compendium of a lot of different writings of the Israelis, refer to that Germany as Gomer too. Togarma is present-day Armenia. And what we looked at last week in the verse, it said that, and many nations with you, many peoples with you. The message is directed to Gog. And it's a direct communication from God of the universe to Gog, telling him what he's going to do. And it comes through Ezekiel, who was one of the captives in the second captivity of Nebuchadnezzar in 597 BC. So who is this? It's these folks right here. It's the Russians. It's the Muslim nations. And it's the Germans. They will all come against in an allied force led by the Russians. As I said earlier, you know, the names of these nations have changed, but the geography stays. The geography stays intact. It really hasn't changed much at all. And the Orthodox Jewish commentary, again, on Ezekiel by Rabbi Eisenman, he made this observation that in one of their writings called Yerushalayim Megillah 3:9, it renders Magog as Gutaya or Gutya. It's the Goths. The Goths. It's a group of nomadic tribes that destroyed the Scythians and made their home in Scythian territory. Now, what we looked at last week was the Scythians and the Parthians are generally not taught in our high schools, at least not in mine. I don't know, maybe some of you learned about the Scythians and the Parthians. They usually gloss over that. God doesn't talk about them much in the Bible either because they don't control Jerusalem. They've never controlled Jerusalem. But the rabbi says, considering that the Goths were a Germanic people, the identification of Magog's descendants as the Goth is in accordance with another Jewish writing called Targum Yosanan from Genesis 10:2, which renders Magog as Germania, and another Jewish writing called the Bereshit Rabbah, it's given there as Germania. Now, this is just additional support for the countries that are going to come against Israel, and they've been identified in Genesis 10. So the Russian persecution of the Jews and the Muslim persecution of the Jews is just about over. I mean, God has just about had enough, and he's going to show them who's in control. Now, the scripture we looked at last week talks about the place where it comes from. Where is this invasion going to come from? It says the mountains of Israel. The mountains of Israel. Where are the mountains of Israel? The mountains of Israel, as you can see, are this line that go right along here. I don't know if you can see that too clearly, but those are the mountains of Israel. And up until 1967, until the 67 war, they didn't have control of this area. This was Judea and Samaria and the eastern half of Jerusalem that the Jordanians controlled, but they lost it in the 67-day war. It's another reason to realize that this prophecy couldn't have happened until at least 1967, because these were not the mountains of Israel at that time. These were just the mountains of somebody. You know, the Jordanians were not originally the Jordanians either. They had a different name before that. But be that as it may, these are the mountains of Israel. I got a couple other overheads here. These are topographical. And this one here, you can see that this is Judea and Samaria. This was a lot of property that was actually controlled by the Jordanians from 1948 till 1967. But now Israel controls it all. And here's just another shot where you can see the mountains a little darker. See what they look like. Those are the mountains of Israel. This is where this takes place. The Jews are in the land. They're in there in unbelief. And what we're going to see is that some of these people in Israel, when this prophecy happens, is some of them are going to become believers. They're actually going to realize who God is, and they're going to say, okay, I believe you. The leaders won't, and most of the people there will not. They're following their leaders. And that's not going to happen until the end of the Great Tribulation when Jesus comes back. But one, this prophecy describes a specific Jewish state. And first, it's a land brought back from the sword. Two, a land that's gathered out of many peoples, and the people have come from around this world to go back to Jerusalem and to Israel. Third, it's a land with mountains that have been a continual waste, And they were a waste up until recently. And forth, the land is brought forth out of the peoples. So Ezekiel is not describing an Israel that ever existed in ancient times. This is an Israel for today. And these all are true of modern day Israel. Now, he talks about this happening in the latter days. I want to go back over what we looked at last week about the latter days so that you get that perspective of what the latter days are. It is for most people, they think it's an obscure passage or passages, if you will, end times, latter days, last days sort of thing from the Bible. They say it's an obscure passage. Well, there is a specific name for that, and there's a specific designation of when that is. When the Lord Jesus was sitting on the Mount of Olives with Peter, James, John, and Andrew, they were asking questions of him, they're the inner circle, about when would the end times happen? When are these things going to take place? And he told them one component of that was the time when the event, if you will, that would be the sign that the end of times has happened, the end of time. In Matthew 24:7-8, he says, "For nation shall rise against nation, kingdom against kingdom, and there shall be famines and pestilences and earthquakes in diverse places. These are the beginning of sorrows." And all three of the synoptic gospels write of this. All three of them. John doesn't. Well, nation rising against nation and kingdom against kingdom is a specific Jewish term that's used to describe a conflict within the geography that's under discussion in the text. It appears two times in the Old Testament, Isaiah 19 and 2 Chronicles 15. And each time it occurs, it says that this is what's happening. This total conflict is happening within the geography that's under discussion. In the Isaiah passage, it's talking about Egypt. In the 2 Chronicles passage, it's talking about the Middle East. In the Olivet Discourse, it's talking about the entire world. So the first time there was a conflict in the entire world was the First World War, 1914. And the First World War and the Second World War were pretty much the same war, same people, same group started it. So that unit is the beginning of the last days. And the last days is going to be a long time. We don't know how long it is. There's a couple other Jewish references, the Sohar Kadesh and the Bereshit Rabbah, that I put in your notes too as well, so you can see that. But that First World War signified that the sign of the end of the age had begun. Now, another reason that the Russians are wanting to come down is because of the matter of spoil. It's not clear what they want. It just says cattle and goods in the text and silver and gold. Those are general Old Testament references to the spoils of war. It could be all the chemicals in the Dead Sea that the Jews are mining and doing really well at, but I think it's probably the oil. It's to get the Russians a stronger foothold in the Middle East to secure that oil. And the Muslims would welcome them in because the Muslims hate the Jews and they won't see the threat of the, or if they do, they hate the Jews more than they worry about the Russians coming in and take their oil. But there's some sort of money, something that they want to get out of this. Now, I'm going to fast forward here up into today's lesson and look at who the destruction of the invaders are and how that happens. God's purpose is to make himself sanctified. And by making himself sanctified, he's getting his vengeance. He's getting done what it is he needs to get done for human history. Now, Ezekiel 38, verses 17 to 23 says, "Thus saith the Lord Jehovah, art thou he of whom I spake in old time by my servants, the prophets of Israel, that prophesied in those days for many years that I would bring thee against them? And it shall come to pass in that day that when Gog shall come against the land of Israel, saith the Lord Jehovah, that my wrath shall come up into my nostrils, For in my jealousy and in my fire of my wrath have I spoken. Surely in that day there shall be a great shaking in the land of Israel, so that the fishes of the sea and the birds of the heaven and the beasts of the field and all creeping things that creep upon the earth and all the men that are upon the face of the earth shall shake at my presence, and the mountains shall be thrown down, and the steep places shall fall, and every wall shall fall to the ground. And I will call for a sword against him unto all my mountains, saith the Lord Jehovah. Every man's sword shall be against his brother. With my pestilence and with blood will I enter into judgment with him. And I will rain upon him and upon his hordes and upon the many peoples that are with him an overflowing shower and great hailstone of fire and brimstone. And I will magnify myself and sanctify myself, and I will make myself known in the eyes of many nations, and they shall know that I am Jehovah. So the question that we promulgated very, very early in the study of what is the invasion in Israel because the wife of Jehovah is violated. In the Old Testament, God refers to the Jews as the wife of Jehovah. He refers to us, the church, as the bride of Christ. The wife of Jehovah has been violated and has gone on for a long, long time. And it's finally, it will arouse God's anger to the point that he's going to cause this invasion to come. And this army is going to be disposed of and destroyed. Several causes are listed here in the text. An earthquake. There's going to be civil war breaking out amongst the invading armies. And there's going to be pestilence, blood, flood, hailstones, fire, and brimstone. Now, these things are going to totally destroy the invading army without the aid of any other nations. It doesn't appear as if the Jews are going to have to lose anybody, because there's nothing about the Jews losing anybody. It's all about the entire other armies lose everybody that they have. God will be sanctified in the eyes of many people. In other words, the world is going to see this and they're going to realize that God is in control, at least those that are believers. The people that refuse to believe that there is a God or that God is in control are always going to be in unbelief. But God's people are going to realize what it is that he's doing. Now, moving on, the text of Ezekiel 39, verses 1 to 6, it follows, we call in hermeneutics, a very common law of reoccurrence. We see this in the early chapters of Genesis, where there's the first two chapters talks about creation. And the third chapter talks specifically about one of the components of the creation and expands out on it. So the law of recurrence is that the Bible will state a concept and then it will restate it with much more detail. And that's what begins to happen here in the 39th chapter. And thou, son of man, prophesy against Gog and say, thus saith the Lord Jehovah, behold, I am against thee, O Gog, prince of Rosh, Meshech, and Tubal, and I will turn thee about and will lead thee on and will cause thee to come up from the uttermost parts of the north, and I will bring thee upon the mountains of Israel, and I will smite thy bow out of thy left hand, and will cause thine arrows to fall out of thy right hand. Thou shalt fall upon the mountains of Israel, thou and all thy hordes, and the peoples that are with thee. I will give thee unto the ravenous birds of every sort, and to the beasts of the field to be devoured. Thou shalt fall upon the open field, for I have spoken it, saith the Lord Jehovah. And I will send a fire on Magog and on them that dwell securely in the isles, and they shall know that I am Jehovah. Now, the new information that we get here that wasn't in the last chapter is that the armies are going to fall specifically on the mountains of Israel. That's where they're going to die. Now, the entire length of the center of the country starts at the Valley of Jezreel that we've seen here, the town of Jenin in Galilee, goes through there, and continues south until they stop at a point north of Beersheba in the Negev, the desert. Those are the mountains. There's some pretty famous biblical cities there. Dothan, Shechem, Samaria, Shiloh, Bethel, and a number of other ones, but I believe the most important one is Jerusalem. That seems to be the goal of the invading armies. All the enemies of the Jews want Jerusalem. They've been fighting over it for years and years and years, and everybody wants Jerusalem because that's God's real estate. That's God's city. You know, you can track a two-city exposition of the Bible all the way from the beginning to the end of Babylon and Jerusalem. And it's really an interesting study if you ever have time to do that. It's another example here where the Six-Day War set up the stage for this fulfillment because, as I mentioned earlier, until the Six-Day War, these were not the mountains of Israel. The Jews did not control those mountains. And another thing, if you're using the King James says that the sixth part of these invading armies dies. Well, that's a mistranslation. The modern versions have been corrected. The word-for-word translations have been, because all of the invading army dies. The Hebrew doesn't say a sixth part. It says all of them die. So while the text doesn't say the Jews lose anybody, the text does say that all of the invading armies die. And we saw the reasons why. You know, the fire, the brimstone, the pestilence, and they're fighting each other. Now, Ezekiel 39:6 adds another dimension where it says, I will send a fire on Magog and on them that dwell securely in the isles, and they shall know that I am Jehovah. Now, not only is the Russian army destroyed, but the land of Russia itself is devastated by the raining of brimstone, and it causes a lot of damage to that nation. Brimstone may very well be, fire and brimstone, a nuclear exchange. One can't imagine any war taking place of any significance in today's environment without nuclear weapons being used. And I'm going to talk about that next week. Well, we're going to look at the kind of weapons. We're going to look at the real Hebrew words that describe these weapons of bows and arrows and so on. Because they're general terms. They're not specific terms that relate to an ancient armament. They're general terms that can relate to modern armaments. But Russia is going to lose all of its political prowess on the world scene. And so will the Muslim nations. They lose. They will not have any more political importance. And my holy name will I make known in the midst of my people, Israel. Neither will I suffer my holy name to be profaned any more, and the nations shall know that I am Jehovah, the Holy One in Israel. Behold, it cometh, and it shall be done, saith the Lord Jehovah. This is the day whereof I have spoken. So a revival of sorts occurs in Israel. Many Jews are going to turn to Christ. They're going to believe that the Messiah is exactly who he said he was. But most of them won't. Most of them won't. We know from our study of Revelation that most of the Jews are not going to until the last of the tribulation. And then every one of them that's still alive will believe. Will believe. Now, what we're going to look at now is this 7 years of burning and close with that. And they shall dwell in the cities of Israel, shall go forth, and shall make fires of the weapons and burn them, both the shields and the bucklers, the bows and arrows, and the hand staves and the spears, and they shall make fires of them 7 years, so that they shall take no wood out of the field, nor cut down any of the forest, for they shall make fires of the weapons, and they shall plunder those that plundered them, and rob those that robbed them, saith the Lord Jehovah. Nuclear weapons can burn. The residue can burn for a long, long time. And next session, we're going to discuss the nuclear weapons, and we're going to discuss the specific timing of this as we close out this whole prophecy. When is this going to happen? When is this going to happen? Now, we don't know the specific day, but we can tell from the text whether it happens during the Great Tribulation or before it. And I'm going to make the case next week that it happens before it, and we'll talk about that in more specific terms next week. Amen?